everyone, this is Cameron Marceau with Black Liver Project doing another hot episode of Monster in a Glass, the podcast where we explore a cocktail and find out where it came from and who made it and possibly why, and then we explore the wild world of history. We do history through the cocktails and discover more about the world at that time. We are going to jump in and do the hot toddy. This has come out a little bit late. We originally scheduled this for July. I'm kind of glad we're dipping into September at this point for the hot toddy. Maybe when we go to the bar, it might be a little bit cooler. Might be a little bit more appropriate of a time.
Are you saying it's not appropriate to drink a hot toddy in July?
I could just see us like all sitting around the table sweating with a warm cup of booze and a clove-studded lemon in it.
We don't need warm booze to sit around the table sweating.
That's true. So the exciting thing is this cocktail is second to the last. We've only got, after this one, we only have one more to redo in the whole giant list. So when we did this podcast long, long ago, the format wasn't great. And so I started working with Jay and started redoing them, getting better information, having more fun. And we did a few, really liked what was happening. And then I said, well, now we have to fucking redo all of them. And so I had to go back and do all of the episodes. So if you've listened to one through, I don't know, 50-some, you've probably heard a variety of different levels of experience with this. And that's because the show has been developing over a period of time, but the episodes have been being replaced haphazardly in the lineup because we just got to keep you on your toes, right? It's more fun that way.
It's like time jumping. Whenever the Bebo was, probably sounds like fucking trash. And then, then you jump into one where it's like more polished and there's more information.
We had one dirty mic and in a crowded bar. And I think that you had like...
PGD wasn't even PGD yet at that point.
Patrick Gavin Duffy, yeah. Getting all maudlin.
I didn't even get my tattoo of PGD. No.
Didn't even have it yet. And your love affair.
That's the tramp stamp, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, in old English lettering, too.
Yeah, you can really see it when he twerks.
Mm-hmm. Which I do often.
Pinkies up, old turkey.
So, I'm here with my good friend, the research guy, Mr. Jason Cruz.
Hey.
And I'm also here with another great friend of mine, Eric the Maestro Martin.
Sup, bra?
Okay, hot toddies. I don't know. I do not particularly enjoy hot drinks. I am not a hot drink person. I mean, I'm trying to think, like hot cocoa, I'll do it, but I don't care for it. It's not a go-to. The only reason I drink hot coffee is because cold coffee goes away too quickly.
Goes away into your mouth too quickly?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, cold coffee is so good, but if I need coffee, it needs to be with me for an hour, half an hour to an hour as I slowly consume it. Because if I just take the coffee and just guzzle it, which I will if it's cold and delicious, then I won't have it anymore, and then I will be sad because I will want more. And that's the thing. A good, cold, non-carbonated beverage is the best thing in the world to me. If you make it hot, I don't know. I think I just want to, like, guzzle everything. I just want to, like, pound everything.
I mean, you could guzzle a hot toddy, but it would be super unpleasant.
Exactly. It would burn you. It would not be something that you could... No, you can't. I can't do that with ginger ale. That's why Moscow Mules are not relaxing to me. It's like people are like, oh, so refreshing. No, it's not refreshing. It burns.
Well, I don't know.
Like that's part of the reason, and we've discussed it on the Milk Punch episode, which is after this one, actually. I love milk because it goes down so easy. Yeah. That's part
Until
of it.
It doesn't.
That's
Until
part of it. Flat pop. Ambrosia of the gods. just unhook the carbonation from the
It's syrup. It's
it's so good. Yikes. And then make it ice cold. Oh.
No.
So how about you? How about you like hot drinks?
I like hot coffee. I do not like cold coffee at all.
Cocoa? Do you do cocoa?
I don't really like cocoa.
Tea?
I'll drink tea every once in a while, usually when I'm sick. I'll drink hot toddies, usually when I'm sick.
I don't ever want them. Tea, I'll drink it cold. I'll make, I'll
see, and I'll
brew a batch of,
it tastes weird to me.
A pitcher of cold tea. That's so much better to me. How about you, Eric? Do you enjoy a good hot drink?
Yes, yeah, of all kinds.
Really?
Yeah. If it's hot, I prefer it. I don't mind if I get burned. It makes me feel alive. So it's...
You're like that.
I wanted to fight back a little.
Yeah.
So what other kinds of drinks? What other kind of hot drinks? Like, do you drink coffee or tea or...
Hot Malort.
Oh, coffee, God. Tea. I would try Hot Malort.
It actually might be better if it was hot. I honestly...
You know, I was just thinking the same thing. It might actually be better.
Mulled wine. I actually haven't had a hot toddy, but it seems like something I would like.
I've had mulled wine. I remember thinking, I bet this would be good cold.
Isn't it just wine then?
No, because usually it's got like a cinnamon stick and stuff in it. And the heat brings that out. But like once the heat's out, I want to put it in the icebox.
Mulled wine cubes.
Yeah. And I just called it an icebox.
Because you're 100.
So, hot toddies. What's the story with a hot toddy?
So I wanted to start with just getting a definition of what a hot toddy is. And go to the old standby, the Oxford English Dictionary, which lists a hot toddy as a drink typically consisting of whiskey or other spirit, hot water, sugar. And hot, I should say, is in parentheses.
Okay, so wait. So it's not just whiskey.
No, it could be whiskey or, and as we go through it.
But it said, or other spirit. Why even bother say whiskey?
Because I think it's mostly made with whiskey at this point. Although I don't think that was totally the
but otherwise, most common. You could do a hot gin toddy.
I suppose you can, and actually people did.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess that's probably because...
Well, okay. Not
that's all they
maybe
had.
Maybe not a hot gin toddy, but they did toddy. We'll get into why. It's okay. In parentheses. Some spirit, hot water, sugar, or honey, and sometimes lemon or spices. And often considered warming, soothing, or restorative. And it says, frequently with distinguishing word indicating the type of alcohol or flavor as whiskey toddy, rum toddy, etc. I found some additional information in Drinks of the World from 1892 is, in our use of the word, toddy seems to mean nothing more than spirit and water sweetened with the occasional addition of lemon peel. Whiskey toddy is the common and favorite species. It's weird they call it a species.
So it's booze and water.
Pretty much. And lemon peel. Or lemon, usually. But even that is like an ingredient that you can do without.
And this is the oldest, what was the date?
This is 1892. We're not on the oldest yet. We're just, this is just some additional definitions of how they, of distinguishing what a toddy is.
It's already pretty different from what we would consider a toddy.
In a way. I mean,
I
the
feel
hot
like,
toddies that I drink are
but I feel
booze,
like,
water.
No, but I think the for us, it has to be hot.
Yes.
If you were to order a toddy now, it would come to you hot. I don't think that we have anything other than hot toddies.
Unless there was a bartender who really, really was very historically aware.
It doesn't matter, though. If he put toddy on the menu, people would expect it to be hot. That's
yeah,
the problem.
But if somebody said asked for a toddy instead of a hot toddy, which I don't even know that anybody...
No, knows. They would, nobody. People would just say toddy and they would expect it to be hot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. So, you know, if the bartender is knowledgeable and he's one of these hipster bartenders in Logan Square who wants to do everything right and knows that toddies aren't necessarily hot, mm-hmm. he's going to make a lot of people upset by putting toddy on the menu and it's not hot.
Sounds like a good reason to do it.
I suppose.
Yeah, I don't know anybody nowadays that would even bother making it cold, but there was, as we'll get into this, it originally was not cold or hot necessarily. It was both or whatever.
Or neither,
right. Warm. Yeah, no, I mean, really, it could have just been like warm. In some cases, it probably was warm if you were, it's not like in the 1800s, there was a readily available ice in a lot of places, so.
So it's a tepid toddy.
Yeah.
Tepid
toddy. Lukewarm, room temperature toddy. So yeah, it says whiskey toddy is the common and favorite species, though there are also apple, gin, and brandy toddies. Toddy differs from grog in being always made with boiling water, but this distinction is not universally maintained nor indeed used by the best authors. From 1933, there's a book called The Bartender's Friend that lists a hot toddy. It says the name hot toddy ordinarily means a hot whiskey toddy, although it is of equal application to hot brandy, gin, or rum toddy. So I don't think anybody was making a hot vodka toddy.
No.
I don't know why you would. But
yeah. Even the gin seems like a stretch.
I feel like it would be like a candle.
A hot gin?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like just the concept, just thinking of a warm shot of gin, it's kind of stomach churning.
Yeah, I can't think of any other case where you would want warm or hot gin.
Then if you wanted to puke.
let's try it.
Yeah. So when you go to the bar, just make them, just say, okay, we want to do a hot toddy, but we also want a hot gin toddy. And he might say no, because he might know that it tastes like a candle or does something.
I wonder if there's a way just to make a round of warm gin shots.
I think you just need one shot. Yeah. I'll be the guinea pig. And if I really hate it, I'll pretend I like it and maybe I'll do it.
I really want to see Nicole do a warm gin shot.
Ooh. She stands her ground. I feel like she wouldn't do it. If we do hot gin, let's not do Hendrix or anything that has any like cucumber nonsense.
No.
Hot cucumber is just a sin against gastronomy.
Hot cucumber?
Yeah.
It sounds like a porn film.
Yeah.
That grosses me out more than hot gin.
Hot pickle.
I mean, hot pickles are a thing. I think that's different than the cucumber, though, because it's pickled. Like, I've had, like, you know, I mean, if you go to, like, Superdog, they, you know, the pickle's on the hot dog, and it's, like, steaming in there. And it's hot, you know, it tastes fine. But a hot cucumber, I feel like, would be, I don't know, rancid, almost? Like, what do you do if you cook a cucumber like that? I don't know.
Well, it gets mushy. And yeah.
All of the water, doesn't the water come out?
Yeah, the cell walls break down, and the bitter compounds get stronger, and
it becomes flaccid.
That it does become flaccid. Hard to get into your mouth.
So many reasons not to cook a cucumber. Well, and I guess the difference is between, like, I mean, what do you do? Boil the gin? Because otherwise, you're cutting it with water then. I mean, that's what the toddy is. You're cutting it with hot water. So it loses some of its taste.
That's
true. I think
true
it still would taste probably candle-like or potpourri-like.
Yeah. It's the botanicals are just not. Whiskey doesn't have the same kind of.
No, because when you water it down with cold or hot water,
it's not flavored with grasses and seeds.
It's flavored with wood.
Yeah.
So you get the vanillins and all the nice warm notes that.
Totally different than juniper,
yeah.
though.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe hot juniper is really good and we're just missing out. Maybe there's a place where they're like, these people don't know what they're missing.
If it's great, they need to put it on the menu and call it hot juniper. Then you have hot toddy and hot juniper. Hot juniper. Juniper sounds like the name of a hipster. It has a mullet.
Yeah, 100%.
And pants right below their nipples.
So that was just like, they didn't give the recipe there, but those were just like an idea. I mean, we kind of now we know what a hot toddy is, basically. And we didn't have a recipe from Haig's book on this one, so I was like, I don't even know where to start. So it was like Jerry Thomas, probably. So
Does he have one?
He did. Before I go into the recipe that he gives, What do you think is
well? One thing that I think is important is that because this drink is not formal, it's not a single. It's a concept, right? It's mm-hmm. not a recipe. That this is a time for Ward 8 to show off a little bit and do what they do for a hot toddy. Ones that I've had previously, it was like whiskey, water, honey, and there was like a wedge of lemon with cloves stuck in it. And then it was just floating in it. So it was imparting the citrus, the lemon, and the clove flavoring too.
So yeah, I mean, like that's pretty much how I've had it. I usually make them at home. I think I've only ordered a hot toddy.
You stud your citrus with cloves?
No,
I mean, no, that's too much work.
No, yeah, and when I'm sick is really the only time I make them.
You just pour the cloves in, just straight.
Yeah, I eat the cloves whole, and then I squirt the lemon in my eye, and then I eat the cloves whole. Yeah, I don't really do it with cloves, but I will do bourbon or brandy and hot water, lemon, honey. But it's because I'm like, oh, I need to get rid of my sore throat, and there's citrus and hot water, you know, that'll...
So when I'm sick, I don't do this because I don't like hot drinks.
So you should.
So it I'm just not...
You.
I just
It warms you up really nice. The only time I think I've ever ordered in a bar was a bar that... sort of like that was their thing. They were like, come get a hot toddy here. And it was like March. I think it was in Seattle. Ugh. Really cold. So
that's
it was
like that's really like my nice. Hell. It's like a bar of hot drinks.
Well,
it's
it wasn't, like... I mean, it wasn't just like, it was more of like a restaurant, but they were like, and we serve hot toddies. And we were like, all right, I mean, it sucks outside. It's really cold and wet. So it was good. But I don't, if I'm going out for cocktails, I don't want a hot toddy necessarily.
No, you think we still think of them as medicinal.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely do.
But
I
don't... they're definitely ordered at Ward 8. I've seen many people
order I can them. See why you would want it. I mean, it's got the alcohol, and if you just want mm-hmm. something to like warm you up, I mean, alcohol tends to warm me up anyway. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's double duty at that point. But Jerry Thomas, he has three toddy recipes. Actually, four. So he has... the apple toddy, the brandy toddy, the whiskey toddy, and a gin toddy. Now, all of these have ice in them, except the apple toddy, which calls for boiling water. And he calls for, it was funny because I've seen this before and I never looked it up because it was like, whatever, it doesn't really matter. But now that we're using it, he calls for half a wine glass of water. And I was like, how much is half a wine glass? Like, what is that comparable to? And I actually had to go around and, like, look pretty hard to find it.
Yeah.
But David Wondrich, in his book Imbibe, says that it was standard 2 ounces in Jerry Thomas's time. So it would be about 1 ounce of water or 1 ounce of booze for that. But it's, yeah, I was like, wine glass? How are you measuring with a wine glass? But it, I guess that was a couple ounces. I guess it was like a jigger. I see this in other places, but it was one of those things where I was like, it's not important to what I'm looking at, so who cares? And I was like, I should probably find out what the proportions are since we are looking at this. Like, how much booze are they putting in here?
At least it wasn't mouthfuls.
That would be amazing. Like, you got to go check out this Jerry Thomas. He puts the booze in his mouth, swishes and then... around, and spits it in your glass. That's the tepid hot time.
It's or the plaque that gives it extra flavor.
Yeah, it imparts the flavoring.
Were you eating cilantro?
Tastes like floss. Good job.
He also has a note in there, and it says, in making hot toddy or hot punch, you must put in the spirits before the water. In cold punch, grog, etc., the other way. I don't know why that is. There was no explanation as to why that would be important, but... he seemed to think that you had to put the spirits in before the hot water.
That's because if you put them in after, so if you have the hot water and you pour the spirits in, then they know what's going to happen and they start screaming.
No, don't put me in.
You have to sneak up on them with the boiling water. You have it sitting in the cup and then you pour the boiling water on them. They're dead. There's no time for them to
scream. Well, you do have to... So now we're giving human qualities to two booze.
And it's kind of a kosher thing, right? You know, it's
like I'm possibly
this whiskey died without pain.
Yeah, well, I mean,
without
is
suffering.
It humane to do it? Putting in the spirits so they don't first, and then they don't know it's coming.
Well,
so
is
like nice spirits. So toddies kind of show up almost everywhere. I found them almost in every book I looked in. Usually they're made with whiskey, brandy, gin, sometimes rum. And there was a lot of recipes for an apple toddy, which was made with the juice of a baked apple, which I was like, this sounds actually really good. It sounded like more like hot apple cider.
But was there a booze in it?
Yeah, I mean, the recipe that he had brandy. Oh, no, cider brandy. But a lot of them were like, well, you bake the apple, and then you take the juice and you put it in the... And I was like, that seems like a lot of work, but it's probably delicious. I wouldn't want to make it for just one. I would, like, you know... Make a pot of it. I guess it would be better. But they usually appeared as cold drinks with the option of making them hot by adding boiling water. So the really early recipes I was finding, almost all of them were cold drinks, unless they said otherwise. And the recipes stayed really consistent, and they never really moved outside of, like, booze, sugar, water. To me, that's sort of the go-to now, that you just have lemon in it. There's no question. But... Not all of the older recipes really had that. That wasn't a thing. It was like, some did, some used lemon peel, some used lemon juice, but it wasn't really consistent.
Is that tied to region, do you think, where lemons were more available?
I don't know if regional, at least back in like the 19th century, the late 19th century, early 20th century, it might have something to do with availability of lemons, but I almost want to say it was just preference. You know, the bartender just, maybe they didn't use lemons all that often. Maybe
well, yeah,
it was availability.
They had tons of drinks with lemons.
Yeah, I mean, something like this, it's...
Well, see, it sounds like the heritage on this goes much further back. Mm-hmm. So the origins would have preceded availability of citrus, most likely. And if that's true, then it's already got kind of a precedent for its form, which doesn't include citrus. So that's going to carry over until the point where somebody decides maybe it's better with lemon.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. And I mean, the ones that Jerry Thomas had, he did not call for lemon.
Yeah, so
in any of them. It was sugar, water, booze.
So its earliest incarnation probably didn't have it. So I guess the question is was it earliest incarnation in a place that didn't have citrus?
That's a good question. The earliest incarnations would have been in Britain, so
yeah. So no citrus.
I mean, we know that they wouldn't. They really had an opposition to citrus. Wouldn't drink their lime juice. And,
yeah, but so, I mean, they also didn't have it readily available early on.
Yeah, by the time you're putting it in a cocktail book, though, I mean, it could. I don't know why they started adding lemon necessarily, but with all these drinks, I feel like that there is just some people just had like piles of fruit. Some people are like, we call for a lemon, and they're like, yeah, throw a pineapple in there, like the whole pineapple, and then like some strawberries and cherries, and you're like,
we've kind of also established, though, that the cocktail bars were more affluent than your working class bars, and so they probably did have more access to fruits, especially the really juicy ones.
Yeah.
And they weren't using a ninja or a, you know, juicer, so like some of these fruits just would have not been accessible for using as cocktails. I mean, it's clear why orange and lemon would be preferred, because they're just they're just balls of juice.
And you can cut them up and use parts of them without the whole thing just going to shit, like as soon as you do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I'm not sure why it came about. It definitely wasn't like, oh, at one point there was somebody put lemon in and it kept being lemon. It was just some people put lemon in, some people didn't. I just think nowadays people just put lemon in it, and as you described with the cloves stuck in the lemon. I don't know where that came from. I mean, that could have been a much later...
So where's the earliest toddy?
So the earliest toddy in this would have been Jerry Thomas. At least we're talking about recipe books in that way. We'll get into when it like when people are talking about it, but when you're talking about a recipe where they're actually like defining what a toddy is...
Mm-hmm.
It's older than that, but let's talk about, before we talk about that, let's talk about where the name comes from. So toddy is, as we talked about in the definition that we got from the OED, it's a term for a mixture of spirits and water appears, this is from 1864 in a book called British and Foreign Spirits. It says it appears to be taken from the Indian word tari or toddy, pronounced toddy by Europeans, the sap or wine of a palm.
So, how is that spelled?
T-A-R-I or T-A-D-I, and that's regional pronunciations. So that's why you get a couple of different, but as Europeans, they pronounce it toddy. So toddy is actually the sweet, in the way they're talking about it from where it comes from in India, is the sweet white sap obtained from cups attached to the cut flowers, stems of various Asian and African palm trees used in tropical countries as a drink. So this was the really fascinating because it has such a really rapid fermentation process that as soon as you take it out of the palm tree, it basically begins to ferment.
Wow.
So they also
call it... That's like magic.
Yeah. That's why there are sometimes animals who figure this out, and then you get drunk monkeys and drunk giraffes and stuff, because they'll, drink the sap, or they'll... More often, there's certain trees...
They're in Africa?
They're in Africa, they're in the Middle East, they're in India.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It didn't seem to be a particular type of palm. It was just a palm tree, as far as I could tell. They have the toddy palm, any of various palms that yield toddy. It was... Specific, they seem to be always talking about India, but then as I found it in other places, they talked about it being in sort of the Mediterranean and Africa, that you could get the same palm wine from these trees. This is from the Oxford English Dictionary again. As I said, it comes from two different versions of toddy, T-A-D-I, and tari. One is from the Marathi region, and one is from, I'm going to just butcher this, but Gujarati?
Yeah.
Gujarati is on the western side of India, and the Marathi is just sort of south of that. It says, the context of early English examples, especially in the first half of the 17th century, suggests that the word was originally encountered and borrowed in southern Gujarat, where Marathi and Gujarati would have been spoken. The variation in vowel and internal consonants reflects regional phonological variation within the Indian languages. So as early as the 1600s, there were references to toddy in Western writing. You get to see the variations in the spellings right away. So the OED had some examples from 1611. It says, a goodly country abounding with date trees, whence they draw liquor called tari or suri.
Oh, so it's date palms.
No, not necessarily.
Really? Okay.
This was just their interpretation. In 1611.
Those silly Brits.
And then there was another one from 1611, Palmito wine, which they call toddy, T-A-D-D-Y. And then in 1620, it says excessive drinking of toddy, and they spelled it T-O-D-D-Y. So you get a lot of variations on the spelling of it. And from 1858, in a book called Fermented Liquors, a treatise on brewing, distilling, rectifying, manufacturing sugars, etc., palm wine or toddy, in the plains of the Indian, I can never pronounce this word. I can't pronounce most words, but archipelago, is that right?
I would say archipelago.
There you go. The Moluccas and the Philippines, a wine is prepared from the sap of the gumudi palm. The Batavian arrack is distilled from the same juice. So we've talked about that briefly in other episodes, arrack.
You come from juice.
Yeah, specifically palm.
Well, I am fruity, so...
And sweet, I mean, and fermented.
It's very fermented.
It's A-R-R-A-C-K, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The palm wine sounds really interesting. They're still drinking it in those mm-hmm. regions, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if we can get our hands on some.
That would...
You probably could. I have... When I was looking around online, they do sell bottles of it.
Is palm wine different from arrack?
That's a good question. Everything I saw, there was a lot of overlap when I was looking at this stuff. Some people would call it arrack, and so there was a lot of... I think it's very similar in taste, and we'll cover it a little bit later, but there was so much overlap in the way that they talked about arrack and toddy. The toddy is the palm wine from the cocoa tree. In order to procure the sap, a sweet sap from the spathe or flowering head of the palm tree, it is tapped near the top of the tree. And I found this... description in tons of sources. It was kind of everywhere. Everybody, any travel book or anything where somebody in Britain had been to India, they were like, you should check this out. It's amazing. They go and they just tap the tree. Right below the crown, the incision is made by sloping upwards and inwards, and a vessel is hung below the wounds, and the juice conducted into it by a small bamboo. Not only the cocoa tree, but also the date palm, the fan palm, and the oil palm of the West African coast yield a rich sap, which, as it flows from the tree, is sweet, but when allowed to stand for a short time, begins to ferment, becomes intoxicating, and afterwards acid. The date juice tastes, when fresh, like rich milk, but when allowed to stand overnight, ferments, and acquires the sparkling quality and flavor of champagne. I'm going to say that's probably not true. Unless champagne tasted really different, I can't imagine that you have a sap from a tree becomes like champagne overnight.
Well, it's not a French writer.
It says, it is said that the palm wine is more drank as an exhilarating liquor by a larger number of the human race than the wine of the grape, which is possible. Maybe at this time, I don't know how large India's population was, but if people were drinking it all over South Asia, the Middle East, and Africa, at that time in 1858, it probably was consumed more than wine, actually. As I said, I found tons of places talking about the toddy in the same way, and I was able to actually go back pretty far. I was like, well, okay, they're talking about, the OED's talking about it in the 1600s, as, you know, referencing this palm wine. So I looked...
So this is coming from British Empire?
Pretty much. Almost exclusively, but occasionally others, but mostly British Empire. There was a book called True Relation Without All Exception of Strange and Admirable Accidents, which lately happened in the kingdom of the great Magor, etc. So from 1622, it says, they have a very pleasant drink, which they call toddy, T-O-D-D-Y-E, like in taste of, to white wine, which distilleth from the panetto trees. So that's why I said it's not necessarily from the date palm, because everybody was like, yeah, it was this palm and this kind of palm and all the palms. 1647, from a book called A Brief Discovery or Description of the Most Famous Island of Madagascar, toddy trees, which produce as good liquors as white wine and sugar, with which in regard of the cheapness thereof in India, or English and Dutch mariners drink so much of it, as to be often drunk or foxed therewith. So yeah, the English and the Dutch were really into it. I found that in a number of places. They were like, yeah, the soldiers that are there, they like palm wine, like a lot.
Thinking about the production, though, if it really ferments in such a short time,
yeah,
compared to other things that require so much work to harvest and boil and ferment, that must seem miraculous.
Yeah, I imagine in the 1600s it was probably like... God lives here.
I was just going to say that. This is where fermented stuff comes right out of the trees. Imagine, that is...
What if maple trees did that? What would Canada be like?
Way drunker, probably.
That'd be hard to do.
But also more populated, I'm guessing. Yeah. People are like, are you kidding me? These trees give booze like right out of the tree. That would be amazing. And then from 1655, and here I cannot choose but take notice of a very pleasant and clear liquor called toddy, issuing from a spongy tree that grows straight and tall without boughs to the top. And that was from 1655, A Voyage to East India by Edward Terry.
All of these sound like different trees.
Yes. And like that's when I was like, well, which palm tree? And then I was like, it doesn't even matter.
I think that they're just confused.
Yeah.
I think they don't know
what a palm tree is.
Like, no, and they the names haven't been solidified because these trees are probably relatively new experience for many of them.
They do not grow in England.
No.
Right.
And then why ask
the locals what it's called? They'd just be like, what's that now?
And they see one tree and then confuse it as being, you know, the palm tree, and they just kind of, these accounts seem just confused.
There were so many. I saw the same kind of description in so many places for like 400 years, basically. And most of them didn't differ. The type of tree, yeah, you're right. I mean, there was no consistency, and that probably was that whoever they had talked to at the time and told, you know, like, what's that called? And they're like, you know, whatever they were told.
Well, they just weren't paying attention to the booze tree. Yeah, they were just like, really excited about the booze.
Yeah. They're dancing in place. They're like...
doing the pee-pee dance.
That's why they were probably calling it a date tree. And it was like, that's a coconut tree. I don't care. I don't care what it is.
Give me the booze.
I need the booze. I mean, and I found so many more. But this one is from 1696. I just wanted to show like the expanse over this, the 17th century. It says, but the cocoa and the palm tree afford a pleasant juice from their head and upper branches. Pleasant liquors. which the Moors as well as Europeans drink of plentifully. A quart of it may be got for a pice or two, and is so strong that it turns the brain as soon as English beer, for want of which the sailors take up with this juice. I'm having trouble reading this because it's all the words are spelled wrong. To refresh themselves when the ships anchor near the shore, for no malt drink is made in India. So there were many places that this came up. I found another instance where they were talking about it in 1729 from a book called A New Voyage Around the World, describing particularly the isthmus of America, several coasts, etc. Basically, the whole world. It says, beside the liquor or water in the fruit, there is also a sort of wine drawn from the tree called toddy, which looks like whey. It is sweet and very pleasant, but it is to be drunk within 24 hours after it is drawn, for afterwards it grows sour. Those that have a great many trees draw spirit from the sour wine called arrack. So that might be where, and I'm not sure if that's exactly true, or if it was like the 1729 interpretation of it, that the toddy is the palm wine that they get directly from the tree, and if you drink it within the 24 hours and it's fermented, it's really good, and then it gets sour, and then they make arrack from the sour toddy.
They distill it?
That's what it seems like. That's what I was seem to be finding, that if that was the difference. Toddy is fermented and arrack is distilled. So many places did talk about, they were like, you got to drink it in the 24 hours. You better do it because it gets really sour or acidy. And I was like, dude, like, this is the, you know, in some places said it became like vinegar. So I was
so
like,
it that was is, kind of a like a substance. Bucket of stomach acid at that point.
God, gross. I mean,
sour and acidic?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe. What a magical
that's
substance,
puke.
Though.
That's...
That, yeah. Like, you take it out of the tree and it starts to ferment, and then you're like, it has a shelf life of nothing. And then you're like, well, it's garbage now. What do we do with it? It's like, distill it. Like, okay. I mean, you probably would, like, because I can't imagine that this was an easy process of getting it from the tree. I'm sure that somebody had to climb up the tree and make the incision and tap it and. How much is it producing?
It was making booze, though, so it didn't matter.
Yeah.
And a lot of it, apparently, if it's a large amount for just a piece or two, I'm guessing they like a piece of silver or something, or shilling.
Probably. Yeah, and they had to have been doing it a lot. I don't know about tapping maple trees, or like once you tap it, like how much...
Takes forever.
Yeah, I mean, this seemed like, no, you just put it right in the top, and then... spews out some palm wine, and then it's, you know,
like a bag of
yeah, get the bag.
It's like a bag of liquor juice. You know, the tree is just,
you know, like a bunch of sailors standing underneath it with their mouth open. I don't know, like just trying to catch.
We better tap it. It's gonna pop.
Yeah.
It's like,
well, maple trees are actually trees, and palm trees are a type of grass. So maybe the capillary action's different.
That makes sense.
Oh.
Okay.
Because sugarcane's a type of grass.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that is juicy the instant it breaks.
That makes a ton of sense. I grew up in Arizona. There are lots of palm trees there. They're not juicy.
Have you tried to tap them, though?
I wouldn't know how. They're like, they were like...
you were too busy tapping cactus.
Big and thorny and like dry. They were like dry and fibrous. I think it was a different tree, a different kind. It had to have,
they transplanted them there, and they were probably like, it's fine, it's hot, right? And it's like, you know, it's a little dry for them. They need a little moisture. So it developed a new species of palm. They were like, we're cactus now.
It's just angry.
Angry palms.
Yeah.
Arizona took the drunk palms and made them just bitter and angry.
Because they can't drink anymore.
When I was growing up, there was a kid in my school who... decided to climb one of the palm trees. And the thing is that they're like shingles. The trunks are like shingles of... And they're usually trimmed to make them slimmer. But they grow out as these kind of spiky, I don't know, ridges. And the palm fronds, they grow out on these long stems with saw blades down the side. So this one kid decided to climb up one, and he slipped and... he had to get lots of stitches in his scrotum.
Oh, my God.
And there wasn't even any booze up there.
Well, so I was going to say, was he trying to tap that tree?
No, I don't know. He's just a kid. So he's a dumbass.
There was a lot of places that talked about this process, and I found an article in Atlas Obscura that echoed the historical information. It said that the clock starts ticking when someone taps palm's wine only ingredient sap from a palm tree. In just hours, the sap becomes wine with an alcohol percentage of 4%, but the level about the level of a wheat beer. Within a day, the wine turns into mouth-puckering vinegar. Palm wine remains largely local thanks to its countdown clock fermentation and its tendency to explode when left in tightly sealed plastic or glass bottles. This is a magical liquid. I want to have some. I want to blow up things with it. I just want to see what it does. Like, there's so many qualities to it already that they name. It's like, it ferments immediately. It turns into vinegar within 24 hours. It could explode.
That's because it's giving off so much.
Probably tons of gas.
Yeah. I mean, all fermenting things do. It's just that this ferments at such a rapid rate.
Yeah. It's weird. I wonder what it is. There's probably like a science behind it that I just didn't look up.
Well, that would suggest there's more bugs in it.
Oh, not like, you don't mean like
no, beetles. Like yeast.
Yeasty bugs.
Yeah. That are working overtime somehow. Because, you know, alcohol is just yeast pee, right?
Could be a specific type of yeast that's co-evolved with those palms so that the palm has an extra defense. Like if something chews on the palm, it's good for a little amount of time, but soon it's disgusting.
Yeah.
And so animals aren't licking on it anymore because it's vinegar.
Yeah.
That's true. Cause that's,
but it's I'm also, that's like it's also different. Sugars. And I imagine that that's part of whatever kind of fruit it has as well, right?
Because that's has fruit.
Because that's where the sugars are. They're usually in the fruit that then act as the food for the seed.
But I imagine at some point the reason, because I was trying to figure, I was like, well, how would you know to do this? Like with a maple tree, you might be at the bottom, right? Like you might figure out that you can get sap from. You have to climb this tree in order for it to happen. But I'll bet you there were animals that were ripping it apart. Maybe, and figured it out, and then people were like, hey, what are they doing up there? Let's check it out. Oh, it's sugary. But yeah, then that's a good defense mechanism for a plant, is to make it so that you're like, you can have a little bit. If you touch me again, it's going to taste like vinegar. So how do we get to the hot toddy of today? So this was pretty confusing, and we've talked a little bit about, because there was no direct connection between the palm wine that was described and what we now think of as a hot toddy. They were drinking that immediately. They weren't like taking it and boiling it and making it hot, or even like making it cold and drinking it and adding other ingredients. Hot toddies didn't ever call for palm wine that I ever found. They never talked about it being boiled with water. It was more like the fermentation. And so, like, I looked at tons of places throughout the 1600s and 1700s trying to figure out where the hot toddy got started. It wasn't until the 1700s that the toddy we're talking about really became a thing. The OED gives an example from 1741, which indicates that it was at least that early. The quote that they provide doesn't indicate any ingredients, but...
Are they bringing the palm wine over and drinking? No.
No.
So
it wouldn't travel.
So in India, a drink is just a toddy, because that's all they have is the palm wine, and they call it toddy.
The palm wine is a toddy.
Okay.
When it gets to Britain, it's something else. The concept.
Exactly.
So
like in India, the people there are drinking palm wine because that's what they have, and they call it toddy.
Uh-huh.
And the Brits go over there, and they're like, oh, it's a toddy, and they're told about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they carry that concept over.
Yeah.
Even though it's not the palm wine, it just means a drink.
That was what was hardest figuring out, why they were calling it a toddy. Like, why, how you got to a toddy in Britain.
Kind of like a Stenga.
In a way, I mean, it's similar, but it's so wildly different. I mean, the toddy is just the sap. That's just the palm wine. You're drinking it out of the tree.
Yeah.
Other than being sweet, which may or may not be the case with a hot toddy.
But it's being taken by the British to mean just drink, because that's alcoholic drink. because that's what the alcoholic drink is.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
In Britain.
I mean,
And the same with in, what was it, Malaysia, where the stenga was served. And so those concepts of foreigners drinking or what they had to drink, not what they had to drink, but the fact that they were drinking, their word for drinking alcoholic beverages carried over to Britain to mean just another word for drinking alcoholic beverages, because they probably already had 20.
Yeah, by that time there was all kinds of things. But that, yeah, and I see what you're saying now. I still don't know why that specifically. The only thing I could think of was if somebody came to Britain and was like, I love this palm wine, can't get enough of it, but I can't bring it with me because it will just turn to vinegar in 24 hours, and there's nothing to, you know, if I put it in a clay jar or whatever, a bottle, it's just going to explode. So trying to reproduce it was the only thing I could really think of, is like, well, I want to reproduce the taste. I mean, if you're mixing sugar and water and booze, I mean, it's really not, I mean, you're getting the alcoholic part, but then how much sugar are you putting in to recreate what comes out of a tree? The way they talk about it, that it was really sweet and alcoholic. In any case, 1741 is the earliest that OED puts it at, where they're talking about the toddy that is not palm wine. So it's, I asked the landlord to make me a pint of toddy. He asked me whether I would have it hot or cold. I told him a little warm. So there you go. So the tepid toddy.
Warm it in your mouth.
Yeah. Hey, have it hot or cold. Like 1741, it's like, do you want it hot or cold? It's like, isn't the cold just kind of warm? Just not hot? It's just the opposite.
Do you want to... Yeah, the difference is whether you leave it, whether it's made in the house or outside.
Cooled in the Thames. Here's some dysentery along there.
We top it off with a little bit of dysentery. In this, they're not really... You know, they're not referring to the palm wines, obviously, since we know couldn't have been made from cutting a palm tree in Britain. I was able to track down the book that this came from, which was The Trials of Samuel Goodyear, etc. And I wanted to check if there was any mention of the recipe, but it's just a kind of a passing mention. It's about somebody who's going to actually be put to death. And they're like asking him, like, hey, you want a toddy? Like, when they say landlord, it was not like the landlord we think of. Yeah. It's like the lord of the land.
Plantation owner.
Yeah. So... You can assume, though, by that comment, that whether they want it hot or cold, it's not the palm wine. So we know at least by that point there was something in Britain that was called a toddy. And I found a couple of other quotes in the OED. None of them mention a recipe. 1786, the lads and lasses blithely bent to mind, baith, saul, and body. I'm telling you, like, this is spelled, like, insanely. Sit round the table, wheel content, and steer about the toddy. 1785, they're low in thirst and droweth, take quench and steer about the punch. So yeah.
It sounds like you're trying to read Scottish.
It's Burns. I think so. Maybe that's why. Yeah. I think that's what it is. It looks to me like I'm trying to read Scottish in American English. Yeah. It doesn't work.
As a side note, try reading Scottish Twitter. It's hysterical.
Really?
Yeah, why? Because it's spelled the way it sounds. It's just fun to read.
If you read it out loud, you would automatically be speaking in a Scottish accent. Is this like phonetically spelled?
A bad Scottish accent, but yeah. Okay,
yeah. That's the only kind I can do. I did find a book from 1784 called A Tour in the United States of America, containing an account of the present situation of that country. It does provide a list of ingredients. Says the gentleman of fortune rises about 9 o'clock. He perhaps make an exertion to walk as far as his stables to feed his horses, which is seldom more than 50 yards. This, as I was reading this, I was like, oh, this is like an account from a Brit in 1784 about Americans, and it's like so sarcastic. So that's, I should just read it like how that sounds. He perhaps may make an exertion to walk as far as his stables to feed his horses, which seldom more than 50 yards from his house. He returns to breakfast between 9 and 10, which is generally tea or coffee, bread and butter, and a very thin slices of venison, ham, or hung beef. That he then lies down on a pallet on the floor in the coolest room in the house, in his shirt and trousers, with a negro at his head, and another at his feet to fan him and keep off the flies. Between 12 and 1, he takes a draft of Bombo or Toddy, a liquor composed of water, sugar, rum, and nutmeg. So, 1784, you have a recipe for a toddy, which is...
And where is that?
That's the U.S.
That's it, okay.
Which is made weak and kept cool.
The southern U.S., it sounds like.
I believe so. So, in 1784, we basically have a recipe for a rum toddy in the U.S. Yeah, as I was saying, I was trying to find this connection between the palm wine and the hot toddy. The only mentions of it are referring to the toddy from the palm trees up until the 1740s. How it got to England is not so hard to figure out, since everybody talking about it was British. There were a number of mentions that I found that talked about sailors and soldiers in India, and I mentioned this, that they were really into the palm wine.
Yeah.
So I thought, like, again, like, maybe if you're in India and you're a sailor or a soldier, and, you know, because the people that were in India and were there for many years and stayed for decades, you know, they probably weren't, like, going back and forth necessarily back to Britain, and wouldn't be like, oh, you have to have this toddy, but the soldiers and sailors probably were traveling back and forth fairly frequently. So I thought, like, well, maybe they're bringing it back and they're trying to recreate it. But I really didn't find anything to back it up. Then I started coming across this when I started searching for toddy, and this is getting into the Eric. This is from 1737, a new general English dictionary peculiarly calculated for the use and improvement of such as are unacquainted with the learned languages. And it says, for Eric, a spirituous liquor imported from the East Indies, chiefly used for drams or punch. The word is Indian, signifying anything strong or distilled, as brandy, etc., are by them called English Eric. But we apply it to that liquor only distilled from the vegetable juice called toddy, which flows from by incision out of the coconut tree. This toddy is a very pleasant liquor of itself, then when drank new, purging those that use it. When stale is heady and makes good vinegar. The English at Madras use it as a yeast or leaven to raise their bread. Goa Eric is esteemed the best, though the Batavian is much the strongest. The first is drawn off in earthen vessels, and the latter in copper stills. So they're talking about the fermentation versus the distillation, which makes it more fiery and not so well relished. So Jerry Thomas also has something very similar to say about Eric. And that's it. It says, most of the Eric imported into this country is distilled from rice and comes from Batavia. It is but little used in America except to flavor punch. The taste of it is very agreeable in this mixture. Eric improves very much with age. It is much used in some parts of India where it is distilled from toddy, the juice of the coconut tree. An imitation of Eric punch is made by adding to the bowl of punch a few grains of benzoin, commonly called flowers of Benjamin, which would make a good band name, I think. And I looked it up, and Eric is not only made from toddy, it's made from all kinds of things, depending on where it's from. So I think when they talk about...
Eric is just a booze.
It is. It's
like, they were saying English Eric.
Right.
Which is
English. And Batavian booze. Eric is, I think that was Indonesia. So like there is, and I think they made theirs with rice, if I remember correctly. So it's primarily from the Middle East and East, but some accounts also has a taste somewhere between, the way it's described is somewhere between rum and whiskey. And I found this in a book from 1771, A Voyage to China and the East Indies. It says, our East India traders buy the Batavia Eric from the Dutch ships and the Goa Eric from the English. So the Goa Eric is the one that it comes from India, as opposed to Dutch Indonesia.
Okay.
Goa is on the southwest coast of India. Says the duty upon Eric is $3 of copper money per quart. The company has lately begun to carry Eric to Sweden on its own account. All was conveyed before by private persons under the name of provision for the voyage. It is known to almost everyone how punch is made, but that it may be observed for the future where it is made to the greatest perfection, I will mention the true proportion of its constituent parts. 2 a quart of boiling water, 1/2 pint of Eric is taken, to which 1 pound of sugar and 5 or 6 lemons, or instead of them, as many tamarinds as is necessary to give it true acidity. A nutmeg is likewise grated into it. Punch, which is made for the men on our ship, was heated with red-hot iron balls which were thrown into it. Those who can afford it make a punch a usual drink after dinner. So that's from 1771, A Voyage to China and the East Indies.
Red-hot iron balls.
Yeah.
That should be a new technique for hot drinks and bars now. What could be more hipster than that?
It's artisan red hot iron balls.
Yeah, drop a instead of whiskey stones, whiskey balls.
Whiskey, hot whiskey balls.
Just drop one of those into the drink, and people would be fascinated with that.
Yeah. I mean, what kind of glass? You would have to do it in a, like, a pewter cup or something that would, yeah. Like, you can drop it in a glass.
It would just explode. It's part of the experience.
Yeah.
Your lacerations are immediately disinfected.
Don't drink the red hot ball. That's the only.
Yeah, people are eating Tide Pods. So, you know, there'd be a
red hot ball.
Red hot whiskey ball challenge.
Jesus. I could see a bar doing that, though. It does seem like something that would come back and be like, no, this is how they did it on ships going from the East Indies.
Let's start something.
Toddy balls.
Toddy balls.
If you have your mixture ready in a good-looking kettle or pot, you could drop in one of those balls. It would create a show, and then you could pour it into a mug pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
That way the person wouldn't accidentally burn themselves.
Yeah.
Get some flair. You do it in front of them
for yeah. this show. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
Everyone would cheer. Yeah. Get Anders on this.
Yeah, That's we're going to get Anders on this. Anders. We're going to do toddy balls.
This is going to be an interesting tasting, because I imagine when you get there, you're going to be like, okay, so we're going to have a hot toddy, but also hot gin shot. Also, we want to talk to you about toddy balls.
How hot can you heat iron?
I mean, you have an oven back there, right? Yeah, I've seen the guy cooking.
You've got a kitchen.
Yeah. Get out. I don't, we're done.
Do you have a blacksmith's apron?
No, that's truly, truly artisan, where if you're wearing a blacksmith apron to make hot toddies, because you're using iron balls. Only the best iron balls. So that's from 1771, but you know, they're making a punch, but it's pretty much a toddy. In mass quantities, the way that they're describing it.
And that's being made with the Eric that you mentioned?
Yeah.
So that could be a way that the name transfers as well, especially if it's made from the toddy originally.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking. The one thing that makes a lot of sense is, at this point, then you have a distilled liquor in the toddy as opposed to the, you know, a palm wine, which is mm-hmm. is going to have a different flavor, of course. And so I figured it must have been earlier than 1771 that they were talking about it. I kind of figured that it probably wasn't, you know, in 1771, some guy was like, what if I mixed Eric and lemon and nutmeg and then dropped iron balls in it? And he was like on a ship. Like, I mean, I know you got to do what you got to do on a boat, but it also the comments about him saying, like, well, if you could afford it, you could have it.
They had plenty of iron balls on ships.
Yeah. Oh, tons. But
big ones.
Big ones. Can you imagine they were using cannonballs at first? They were like, that's too much. They're like, drop it. Like, and some guy who just, like, picks it up with his hands. Like, this isn't working.
That's actually why they had hooks.
Toddy ball accident. So I was looking at this book. So it was published in 1771. But when the voyage started, that they're describing, was in 1750. So sometime in the 1750s, this is his description of it. But I think that this might be where you get the morph into what we see as the toddy. As Eric was saying, you have the Eric, which is the distilled toddy.
Mm-hmm.
So they're calling it a punch, but I could see them saying, like, well, no, this is the Eric. They get it from the toddy tree. You know, I didn't find anything that was like a direct connection or that explicitly said anything like that. But I think it's probably a pretty good guess that's where it was coming from. The same general time period that the toddy references started appearing, and 13 years before we get the recipe for that rum toddy in 1784. 1750s, you start getting, you know, the Eric and mixed with the water with the iron balls. And then in 1784, you have what is essentially a hot toddy in America. So I think it's probably safe to say that's probably where it came from. This is from Difford's Guide, where they're talking about Eric. And it says, Eric is often confused with the similarly pronounced and spelt Arak, which is a Middle Eastern anise-flavored distillate similar to pastis or ouzo.
Mm-hmm.
Arak, spelled with two R's and a C, is harder to define as it is a spirit which does not have a uniform category. Indeed, arak is a Hindi catch-all term for distilled spirits in the same manner as liquor in English. Helpfully, arak does have two predominant styles and origins. Ceylon arak, distilled from palm sap in Sri Lanka, and Batavia arak, distilled from molasses in Java, Indonesia. This neat categorization by country is confused by the fact that arak can also be made from sugar palm juice in western Indonesia, and palm sap-based arak is also traditionally made in the Philippines and in Goa, southern India, although these are not exported. Readers of David Wondrich's excellent punch will be aware of the importance of arak, particularly Batavia arak, as the original base ingredient of punch, the mixed drink that predates the cocktail. Batavia arak was first imported to Gothenburg, Sweden, and from Java in 1733 by the Swedish East India Company, which I didn't even know Sweden had an East India Company. Like, I knew Dutch and English, but like...
Yeah, everybody was doing it. They all had their rise and fall.
Mm-hmm. It's just surprising Sweden. I don't know, but I guess...
The Danish did too.
As part of the hugely profitable spice trade, and it's no coincidence that spices such as nutmeg also feature prominently in punches. The British East India Company was also in on the act, and as punch houses became fashionable in London, the company shipped the arak, citrus fruit, sugar and spice, which along with water are the five essential components of a punch. So you have the punch being made basically a hot toddy just in mass quantities.
Yeah.
From the Cyclopedia of Foods, Condiments and Beverages from 1888, small quantities of arak are imported into England for making punch. It is a very strong spirit, frequently containing as much as 55% of alcohol. So arak is not standardized by this in the 1700s. This is my theory. And it's coming from different countries. They're using different base ingredients. This type of punch is made with arak from toddy. There's a need to distinguish it from other arak. So if you're in London and people are making punch with toddy arak, it's possible that that's, again, like where they started referring to it. It's like you have people on a boat who are making punch with arak. But if punch is on this boat is made with arak and punch in London is made with brandy, you can't just be like, well, it's all punch. Just give me punch. Like, which one? Punch. Like, you have to start making a distinguishing between what type. So I could see how it seems like an easy transference of saying, like, this one's made with arak. Just call it toddy. I could see an easy leap there.
But then it just shifts to all warm drinks.
Well, not all warm drinks are toddies. I mean, there's warm punches. I mean, they're all kind of the same. Like, if you're drinking a toddy, I would think of it as a singular drink. You're not like, make a punch bowl of toddy. I mean, like, I guess you could, but...
You'd have to keep it warm.
Right. Whereas, like, a punch, yeah, you can make lots of it.
But I guess I'm just thinking, you had hot drinks that were with arak and hot drinks that were with punch, and you had to distinguish, and that's why you called them toddy. But then that necessity to keep it distinguished fell away because then you start calling warm whiskey and warm brandy drinks toddies.
But I don't think that even though you have somebody making a warm toddy or a hot toddy on a boat in the 1740s, by 1862 with Jerry Thomas, you still don't have, like, he lists them as cold toddies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a weird thing. It's not an easy transition where it was like, well, no, hot drinks are toddies. It's like, no, toddies are toddies. Like, the toddy's the drink, and it could be cold or it could be warm. And at some point, probably much later in the 20th century.
That seems like arak and toddy got conflated.
Yeah.
Because arak just meant booze. And then toddies were all different kinds of booze eventually.
Yeah, I mean, toddies eventually became like rum or
brandy. So it's just like this big mess of concepts just kind of splatting together and people just trying to figure out what's going on. And the true meanings of the words have fallen away to just represent ideas that nobody really has a clear handle on.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, and that's almost, 400 years ago, people were like, hey, they're pulling toddy from this tree. They still call it toddy to mean the sap from the tree, but like, it doesn't mean the same thing now, you know, as we're talking about it.
Okay, but arak to them just meant any kind of booze, like the word liquor for us.
Yeah, yeah.
But in particular, arak is specific.
I think what it said was in India, arak came from the toddy tree, from the toddy sap.
Because it's the only thing they had.
Right.
The only booze.
But whereas...
So Eric was just mint liquor. Because that was the booze that they had from the toddy.
Right, but they were still referring to it as Eric in the at that time. It was still a distinguished thing that this is... If you were Todd, British and you were in India and you were getting Eric from India, then it was made from a toddy tree. It wasn't just, well, this is just alcohol. And like they even said it had a distinct flavor between rum and whiskey, like something in between there. So it was definitely sugary, you know, but like, but they already had brandy. They already had.
But I think the words have these meanings. So like for the people in India, the Indians, toddy was an Eric.
I don't toddy, know that that's what they were saying.
Well, they were called gin and whiskey English Eric. So that's English liquor.
Oh, you're right. Yeah,
so
yeah,
toddy was an Eric. Eric meant just booze.
I can't say for sure that that's true. I see what you're saying. And yeah, they said, I don't know that all of India thought Eric just meant booze, though.
Well, yeah.
So some people thought that like that they just referred it
English as, yeah. spirits.
Yeah,
English
they were calling Eric. It brandy. Yeah, yeah. I don't know that that was like a uniform.
Yeah, well,
concept that they would just call it Eric.
Nothing was uniform because it took
no
half a year to get anywhere.
Right, exactly. And even now, I mean, we can't even, like, as we're talking about it, we can't keep it straight because it's like, this is different than a lot of the drinks that we've had.
What we're doing is we're pulling together all of these different writings from probably, what, a span of 300 years, 300 or 400 years. And in the course of this, the words have lost meaning or changed, the words have morphed in different passages to mean different things. And it's really hard to figure out what exactly people, and probably even at any one given time, people were using the words differently.
Oh yeah, 100%. Like it wasn't like at this point in time, toddy or palm wine stopped being called toddy and it became this. It was like, no, that was still a thing and this is a new thing, but it's not even like, and it's completely different.
And I bet British, you know, people who were in India came back and just thought the word toddy, I'm sure they had the palm wine, but they just thought the word toddy meant a drink. And so they went back and told all their friends at the bar and they were like, let's have toddies. That's what people say in India. It's a toddy.
Yeah. It's
just like the stenga for the stinger. It's like, we're in Malaysia. Let's all order stengas.
It was a mess trying to even figure out all of this because every time I looked, I was like, okay, but then you have this happening. And it's like just diving into all these books. I mean, everybody was, Britain was traveling to India, apparently. Like everybody wrote a book about it too throughout like the 16th and 1700s. It was like, so, and everybody's mentioning toddy trees. And then at a certain point, they're talking about something else. But yeah, I mean, it's never clean, especially at this time. So, but I think you can kind of see where it starts to make the change. And that's definitely in the mid 18th century where it starts to appear in London, in Britain, as more closely related to the toddy that we have today. As I mentioned earlier, that I only drink hot toddies when I'm sick. There was a lot of mentions of health benefits to this, especially when you're fighting a cold. You know, a lot of people, like I said, well, that's just a placebo. I mean, like, you're not really, you know, you're tricking yourself into thinking that you're making yourself better. But, I mean, there's something to be said. You're drinking warm liquid. If you're sick, you know, you're drinking warm liquid. You have the liquor, which also makes you warm up and makes you sleepy. It's sugar or honey for a sore throat. Lemon, you have the vitamin C. You know, and it could, maybe it's, it makes me feel better sometimes, and sometimes it makes me feel worse, depending on how sick I am. But I think it does make people at least feel somewhat better. And I found a various descriptions of the use of hot toddies in treating health issues. And this one is from a book about cholera. It says, our earliest experience in the treatment of this disease commenced with the last stage, and the advice of the most distinguished European and Asiatic physicians was faithfully pursued with little or no success in the collapsed cases. For the purpose of restoring warmth to the surface, we employed hot blankets, bottles filled with the hot water, hot sandbags, the hot air bath, and frictions with the hand or stiff brush. I'm not sure what that is. Hot toddy, the carbonate of ammonia, sulfuric, and phosphoric ether were administered to revive the action of the heart and artery. So they were using it to like warm up the body and like get, for people who had cholera. That was from reports of hospital physicians and other documents in relation to the epidemic cholera of 1832. Then from 1844, the theory and treatment of fevers. Let us now illustrate should a case set in with symptoms of prostration or that fading away as intimated in our first view of the subject, when we should endeavor to bring out as prompt reaction return of natural warmth and development of febrile symptoms as we can. For this purpose, we should restore the animal heat by external heat applied in the form of warm water to the feet and legs, warm bricks, bags of heated sand or salt, mustard to the extremities.
Frenches?
Yeah.
Just hold out your arm.
Do you like yellow grape mustard, or do you like Polish mustard, some Dijon?
Pardon me. Do you have any grape upon?
Yes, it's on my extremities. And the prompt and reasonable use of warm diffusible stimuli taken inwardly, such as a hot toddy. And then from 1912, the Calcutta Journal of Medicine, a little hot today at bedtime, even though it's supposed to be toddy, but it's today, at bedtime is a wonderful hypnotic for the old. At first, it stimulates the cerebral circulation, giving pleasant thoughts and a sense of well-being and comfort. It's like, yeah, that sounds right.
I find I'm often hypnotized.
Soon the tide changes, and then the warm blood from the internal organs is carried to the surface, giving a sense of warmth to the body. The circulation in the brain comes down to the sleep point, and sleep speedily supervenes. But this sleep is often of short duration and must be supplemented by other remedies. So it's like, have a hot toddy. It'll make you go right to sleep. You are going to wake up again.
Because it's drunk sleep.
It is drunk sleep. And also for old people who, in my experience, elderly people don't really sleep that much. They sleep a few hours a night. And so it's like, but just drink a hot toddy. And then when you wake up, have another one.
Yeah, just keep them going.
Yeah.
They have so much yelling to do at the younger generation. They just can't stay in bed.
Bathing the feet in lukewarm water or bran and water, a little hotter than milk just taken from the cow, at the same time that something warm.
That is not a cereal I want to drink. I want to eat.
Bran.
Feet bran. Feet bran.
At the same time that something warm as a glass of hot toddy punch or mulled wine is taken internally, forms a remedy upon which many people place their sole reliance for the removal of their colds. And that's from 1827 in The Medical Companion. And this is an interesting one I found from the New York Journal of Medicine from 1843, which calls for a very strange method of curing delirium tremens. It says, no sooner is he relieved from his burden than sensibility and motion are restored. He opens his eyes in a furious, wild delirium with the horrors and calls for something to drink. In this stage, a glass of hot toddy with 25 drops of... When I looked it up, I was like, what is TR.OPII? It's like, oh, it's laudanum. So 25 drops in a hot toddy of laudanum will seldom fail to tranquilize him.
I'd hope so.
I would hope so, too. Because if it doesn't, you have bigger problems because this person is superhuman.
Yeah.
Give me another.
You're dealing with Satan.
Yeah. A few doses more will induce a sound sleep, from which he will wake ready for another cruise, either at sea or on shore. This is, they're talking about soldiers, too, who have the DTs from drinking. When this treatment does not succeed and there is much delirium with a full pulse, venesection should be restored to. After this, the administration of opium and asafoetida in large doses will be sure to tranquilize the nervous system and procure a profound sleep, which last is in all cases the best restorer of exhausted nature. So they're treating DTs with heavy doses of opiates and alcohol, which I'm not sure, but in 1843 that sounds about right, but I'm not sure that they use that treatment anymore.
Oh, I think they do.
Laudanum and alcohol to treat the DTs?
Just a different form of opiates.
Oh, yeah. No, that's true.
And cough syrup.
So hot toddies show up in many medical journals and books, and it's a recommended way to deliver medicine, such as putting quinine in hot toddies to treat malaria, adding lactophosphate and lime to a hot toddy for consumption, morphine to it for nasal or bronchial issues, which I was like, morphine for bronchial issues?
Okay. In all of these cases, is there liquor added?
Yeah. At this point, it would have been the mid-1800s through the 1900s, because otherwise it would just be water.
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out, if hot toddy was just being used as a warm medicine rather than also having the booze.
So
kind of like the julep was originally just like a thing to flavor medicine, and then it became a cocktail.
So with these cases, I think it's the cases I just described. They even had like mixing it with chloroform for asthma. Like, so there were ways to deliver medicine. In all cases, it was like, drink this warm liquid with a lot of opiates. And
the goal stuff is that'll put you, just to knock ether. People out. Yeah, right. And then they'll, and then they won't complain anymore.
Right. Pretty much.
That asthma won't bother you now.
Yeah. Like, well, it won't bother you because your kid's asleep now. So, yeah, it was usually used as a way to deliver, but it was also on its own. It was recommended to treat insomnia. It was used. It was recommended as a diuretic to induce expectoration, and even in some cases used as parts of depression treatments. You know, in the list of things they had, like reducing fever, pleurisy, extreme gas, chest pains, with or without laudanum. And many more. And I found the phrase hot toddy used much more in terms of medical treatment than I did in cocktail books, for that matter. I mean, it showed up in a lot of cocktail books, but not as hot toddies. Really just toddies. I mean, like the brandy toddy, the whiskey toddy. So yeah. It seemed like it was very much... It was like, no, this is a treatment to treat a cold. Or consumption, if you add morphine to it. I wanted to see if there was a health benefit connection to the toddy from the palm tree. And I did find things from the 1600s that talked about using it for a diuretic, used as a laxative. It was also used in treatment of hydrophobia, which was from 1798, from a book called Remarks on Hydrophobia. You know, I don't know that it had a direct influence on it, but there was at least a health benefit interpretation for the toddy that came from the palm tree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking about like drinking it when you're sick, but I found a lot of things that talked about it was a good drink to have at the end of the day. There's a book called from 1820 called The Journal of Travels in England, Holland, and Scotland, and of Two Passages Over the Atlantic. Both dinners and suppers, when they are meant to be hospitable, are here concluded by the drinking of hot toddy. A pitcher of hot water is placed upon the table, and each guest is furnished with a large foot glass. I don't know what a foot glass is.
It's where you put your cereal.
Your feet brand.
No, don't use that one. That's for the foot glass. That's for the brand. Holding nearly a pint, in which he mixes his water, spirits, and sugar in such proportions as he pleases. Whiskey is preferred on these occasions, but that of the Highlands, which is the best, is so expensive in consequence of the excise that is not universally used. Each foot glass has a small wooden ladle, which is employed to dip the hot toddy out into wine glasses from which it is drunk. The ladies are not supplied with foot glasses, but the gentlemen occasionally laid out some of their own hot toddy into wine glasses of the ladies. I feel like the way they describe that is like, you know, like a child. You're like, no, you can't have my beer, but you can have a little sip. You know, like, it's like, this is an adult woman. Like, yeah, I guess you can have a little bit of my hot toddy. Who thus partake of this beverage, although it is with much moderation. You will perhaps infer that such habits must lead to intemperance. It cannot be doubted that they have bad tendency. And although I have never seen a single instance of excess in this way, it may well be presumed that the fumes of such a hot inebriating mixture must occasionally be had. That is something I didn't notice the first time I read that, but yeah, I can't imagine you'd be drinking tons and tons of hot toddies. After a while, I feel like that would be just too much hot liquid. I feel like I would just be sweating. Like,
yeah.
If I had more than one or two. In a book called Crossing the Atlantic from 1880, it was a book of illustrations done from the a voyage across the Atlantic. So it was just what was happening on the ship. And it was a ship called the Ethiopia. And it accompanied an illustration there was of people sitting and eating was this menu. And this caption, it said, evening, game at cards and supper. And he gives the menu, which was broiled sardines on toast, Welsh rabbit, deviled ham, grilled bones, washed down with hot toddy. So I don't know if you put the bones in the toddy. Probably not, but grilled bones.
There were no vegetables in that.
Aren't sardines vegetables? Yeah, there literally was. It was all meat products.
Meat bread.
And carbohydrates. Well, I mean, maybe there was a lemon in the hot toddy. And then from British and Foreign Spirits, 1864, they talk about the hot toddy being at the dinner table of the aristocracy. And they do talk about whiskey and hot water and sugar. So it's, you know, the simple recipe that they have. As I mentioned, there was, we talked about that one where they were talking about the guy who, this sarcastic Brit talking about the guy from America, and he like gets up leisurely and like maybe feeds his horses. So this is from a source called Travels Through the Interior Parts of America in a series of letters from 1789. Most of the planters consign the care of their plantations and Negroes to an overseer. Even the man whose house we rent has his overseer, though he could with ease superintend it himself. But they possess a few Negroes that they think it beneath their dignity, added to which they are so abominably lazy. I'll give you a sketch of this man's general way of living. He rises at about 8 o'clock, drinks what he calls a julep, which is a large glass of rum sweetened with sugar. Like, here's a julep. It's rum. Sweeter rum. And then walks, or more generally rides around his plantation, views his stock, inspects his crops, and returns about 10 o'clock to breakfast on cold meat or ham, fried hominy, toast, and cider. Tea and coffee is seldom tasted, but by the women. He then saunters about the house, sometimes amusing himself with the little Negroes who are playing around the door, or else scraping on a fiddle. About 12 or 1, he drinks toddy to create him an appetite for his dinner, which he sits down to at 2 o'clock. After he has dined, he generally lays down on the bed and rises about 5, then perhaps sips some tea with his wife, but commonly drinks toddy till bedtime. During all this, he is neither drunk nor sober, but in a state of stupefaction. This is his usual mode of living, which he seldom varies, and only quits his plantation to attend to courthouse and court days, or to some horse race or cockfight, at which time he gets egregiously drunk, that his wife sends a couple of Negroes to conduct him safe home. So it's like describing this plantation owner. It's like, basically, he's so lazy, all he does all day is drink and eat and sleep. And I was like, this is great. I enjoy that this is the picture that this is they're painting of in 1789. It's like, look at these lazy fucking Americans. Like, not only is it bad enough that they own people, but they're also fucking drunk and lazy. But huh. Yeah. Like,
who is that who wrote that?
His name was I don't know the first name here, T. Enbury, printed in London. And Travels Through the Interior Parts of America.
What was the time?
1789.
Oh, okay.
Which is not surprising that the British were, like, talking shit about Americans, but, yeah. Like, it was in such an accurate way, I'm guessing. It's not just, the, like, you know, making up stuff. He's like, I saw a lot of places that had very similar descriptions, and I don't know if it was just, like, a thing where you're like, check out these guys. But it was, like, it was always somebody who traveled to America and then was like, you would not believe what these people do. None of them work. Like, they just kind of hang out. Now, I don't know where they were, necessarily. Like, the interior parts of America could have been...
I also...
The
South, they have
been the west, as far west.
And they were missing the work that they were doing. Whether they didn't see it, or they just conveniently didn't discuss it. Because, I mean, there was stuff they were doing.
It's their plantations. There's seasons. So, if they're there and they're not harvesting or planting, you're just waiting the rest of the time.
Yeah. No, I know.
I assume the plantation owners were the ones who were arranging for shipments and making the deals to sell the product that they were making. So there would have been travel, and there would have been negotiations, probably over toddies. But, I mean, still, it would have been meeting with people, and not unlike the way people do business today in some senses. So the fact that there's... literally just people walking around talking to each other and arranging stuff.
That said, it does sound a bit fun just to maintain a buzz all day.
Yeah.
Like the 50s.
Or now, if you're just drinking White Claw for breakfast. Yeah, I don't know if I could maintain a buzz all day. I am totally not opposed to day drinking.
It's just that it goes too fast and then you're no longer buzzed, you're wasted.
Yeah,
it's a skill.
Yeah. It's hard to like keep it consistent and not fall asleep.
Yeah.
Like for at least for me, where I'm like, all right, I just want to take a nap for a while. And then when I get up, I'm not like, well, now let's continue. It's just like, well, I just want to sleep more.
The guy in the description fell asleep. He took a nap and then he woke up and he's like, oh, dinner's coming.
Yeah, better have a hot toddy.
Yeah, got to get that buzz going again. So I have an appetite.
Get up and drink a glass of rum for breakfast, and then you're like, all right, let's do this. I got to sit down. Like, and then dinner's at 2. I was like, really? Okay. I mean, it couldn't be
too late because you can't see anything. Right.
It's like, but like, he's going to go get drunk. And then he goes to the courthouse or wherever and got to send people to go get him.
You could just light his breath on fire. Then you'd have the whole place lit up.
Yeah.
Hot toddy candles.
Made with gin.
Real juniper. So that's it. That's the hot toddy story.
Oh, okay. So we've got a lot to do at the bar. That's what it sounds like.
You
got to
make a list. You've got a lot of demands.
See if the kitchen folks. can heat up some iron balls.
Like, I'll bring my own if you want.
Your own iron balls? I think that's too suggestive. I think
they were locally sourced iron balls. I don't know where you
artisanal
get
balls.
Artisanal balls. I don't know where you get iron balls from.
Yeah, I don't think that that's something that people have on hand nearly as much anymore. I think iron balls were more popular back in the, 1600s, 1700s.
When people were killing other people with them.
What else would you do with an iron ball besides heat up your drink? Maybe that would have been an extra little touch. Would be to kill someone with an iron ball, retrieve it, and then, heat up your drink with it.
I mean, it would give it a weird flavor, I think. Depending on how soon you retrieved it, too, would be...
I suppose it would still be hot.
Probably not. It would also probably smell if you waited a few days to retrieve it. Gangrene.
Okay. Well, cool. Hot toddies. Let's
get your balls ready.
Yeah. We'll go over. We'll go to the bar. We'll see what they whip up for us in a hot toddy form, and then I don't know. Maybe we'll play.
The Hot Toddy, very old Barton whiskey, lemon juice, honey, chamomile tea.
So we are here at Ward 8, ready to have hot toddies. Lucky for us, the cold snap in Chicago has happened.
Oh yeah.
So we can feel okay about having a toddy.
Leaves are yellowing, the wool is on.
The wool is yellowing.
Probably.
The leaves are on. I'm here with my delightful Black Lover Project friends on the tasting team, Mr. Jay's Ranville.
Hello.
Jace, do you have a favorite cold cure? Do you have a remedy for being sick?
Alcohol and sleep. I all of my cold cures are straight Victorian.
I was going to say
which
Russian.
That's not how I would describe you.
No. Irony. I'm much, much more Edwardian. I mean,
yeah, way more contemporary.
Way more.
We're also here with Nicole Pizzini.
Hello.
And Nicole, cold or flu remedies?
Sudafed. Put my name on that list, man, because that is the best way to cure congestion.
Sign your life away.
Sign my life away. Give me the good stuff. Take some Sudafed and hang on tight.
Okay.
Yeah.
I used to get horrible, horrible colds as a kid. And so I would take Sudafed, and I took it so often it stopped working for me.
No.
Which was really frightening, because I'm one of those people who gets the kind of cold where it's like there is no breathing at all. But because I didn't take it for so many years, it now works again.
Yeah. You want to have some real fun, get a cold, take probably too much Sudafed, and then have a cup of coffee. Yes.
We're also here with Ms. Rachel Rubin. And Rachel, do you have a favorite cold or flu remedy?
Hot alcoholic drinks. So yeah. This is an appropriate time to be out.
And Mr. Eric Martin.
Hey.
Cold and flu remedies?
Watching Huddling. All the Harry Potter movies.
Oh, yeah?
And self-flagellation.
Is it like with your cat? You like swing your cat along your back and...
Yes, yeah. The claws take your mind off the cold.
A little beating never hurt.
So I assume everybody here knows toddies.
I think we've all known a toddy at some point.
I don't look forward to the cold every year. I'm always sad when summer ends and the temperature drops. But I do look forward to hot toddy season.
Yes.
Do you do toddies just to do them, or do they have an occasion?
I just do them just to do them.
Yeah. It's like the pumpkin spice latte of alcohol. It's like, you know it's fall. It's toddy time.
Seasonal and overdone?
Yes.
But are toddies... Toddies aren't just for fall, though.
No,
they extend all the way through
all of
the bitter
time.
Months.
Like, is it below 60 degrees?
Are you allowed to have a pumpkin spice latte in February?
No.
it's Trump's America. You're allowed to do whatever you want.
Punishable.
Eat, you know what? Have a pumpkin spice latte in February.
Eat a baby.
Eat peppermint in summer. It's up to you.
Okay, that's fine.
Wear white after Labor Day.
Yeah.
Rules are off.
You can do what you want. I hold myself into some things, some foods I really feel are seasonal, though. Like, I will not buy the peppermint mocha creamer to go in my morning coffee until it's after Thanksgiving. Bridge too far for me.
Some traditions are worth keeping.
Yes.
It does seem kind of wrong if it was July. Would you even want it? It just doesn't seem like it would.
A toddy in July would just make you sweaty.
Just spike an Arnold Palmer at that point, right? Like, you've got the...
I'd say we kind of have them in summer. They're just not warm.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that brings me to another question. Palm wine is also called toddy?
In the first part of the show, toddy was the alcohol in India, and they really liked it because you would tap a palm tree, you'd get the sap, and within minutes it would ferment. It would be alcoholic really fast. So toddy was the palm wine, but then there was another term, arak, A-R-R-A-C-K, which meant, from what we could glean, meant alcohol. So the Indians would refer to English arak, and that would be like brandy and gin. So before there were English and Dutch, their arak was toddy. But the thing is that it goes bad really fast. Toddy goes bad really fast.
That makes sense if it's fermenting in under a minute.
Yeah. So like you tap the tree, and then you have to drink it within the day, or by the next day it's like foot cheese.
Not bit like vinegar, but like...
It's like sour and...
Got it.
Yeah. And as I understand, I think that he said it was kind of a milky consistency, so...
The original ranch dressing.
Oh, gosh, no.
The universal condiment.
So can I ask you a question here?
Yeah.
So when did y'all start... When was the first time that you had a hot toddy? Because for me, like, I remember it was probably like after college. I don't think we had any kind of concept of what one was before, and I happened to be hanging out with some friends who had a very high opinion of themselves. For what I remember going to some of their houses, and that was what they wanted to drink. They were really, really all about this. And the problem is, I had always kind of associated a hot toddy with the thing that, like, your great aunt Gertrude would do when she was feeling particularly vexed. So to me, it was just this very, like, you can't have a hot toddy unless it's, like, served with a doily in a very stuffy apartment.
Jay.
Yeah.
I need you to tell me everything about your great aunt Orchid, because I think I need to model my life after her.
We don't have enough doilies in this day and age.
Definitely no.
Oh, believe me, my family inherited the doilies. I think we have them in a box someplace. I'm happy to supply you with a doily.
See, the problem I have with hot toddies is, to me, I just think medicine. And because they're hot, I don't really enjoy hot drinks as much. That makes it even more medicinal. You're doing this for your health, not because you like it.
Any excuse to drink something warm, I'll take.
I love hot toddies. I love them.
My hands get so cold, so honestly, I'll just drink hot water. Like, please give me warm beverages.
Yeah, I drink a lot of hot toddies in the winter. They're very comforting, but it's like I don't really like to like go out and party anymore like the young people do. But
Want a doily?
Nicole's husband says I'm secretly an old man, and I think it's true.
I don't think there's anything secret about it.
No, it's not secret. I'm just an old man. So, but like with the hot toddy, it's like you can still have more sociable drinking, but it's also comforting and warming and nice. And so it gets
epitome.
That nice line for me of like, I'm going to be home and I want to wear stretchy pants, but I also want to get a little drunk.
Yes. Yes.
It is the epitome of a cozy drink, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure people will order one at a bar, but generally speaking, it's not the kind of thing that you're like, we are going to rage tonight on hot toddies.
Right.
And speaking of raging on hot toddies, here we are. We've been given a kit.
Yes.
It's a kit.
Oh, they do such a good job here. There are cloves.
Presentation.
There are, what do we call it, lemon cloves, studded lemons?
Cloves, studded lemon. Anders, some assembly is required here, right?
Yeah, this is kind of do it yourself.
I thought that's what we were paying you for.
No, we're paying him to stud the lemon.
This is a Ward 8 style, a bourbon hot toddy. We use very old Barton 100 proof, something with a little bit of a bite. Then we add in honey, lemon juice, and then in the tempered glass we put a cinnamon stick, twist of lemon, and then orange peel studded with clove.
Nice.
And on the side, you know, some people will top it off with water, hot water. We do a chamomile tea, so it's kind of just like a calming, soothing little lemon wedge on the side if you want to add a little bit more acid. Otherwise, that's pretty much it.
Fantastic.
Yeah. You're going to be sweating in no time.
Yeah. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thanks, man.
That's what I love to hear.
So to actually, that's also.
Oh, I wrote him.
So yeah, and also the fact that you said we're paying him to stud the lemon, I was
right?
Just like,
yup. Yep.
Lemon stud.
Yeah.
That absolutely would make a great drag queen name.
That is a gentleman walking on stage, lemon stud.
Yeah.
Maybe a drag king name.
Yeah, considering lemon party has a male connotation.
So Eric, do you have a background with hot toddies yourself?
I've never had a hot toddy.
Really?
No.
Hot toddy virgin.
I am not a warm beverage person. I like iced coffee. I like iced hot chocolate.
We're the cool side of the table. You're the hot side of the table. That's how this has worked out.
I'm
wherever
always
I
warm.
Am is the hot side of the table.
I'm always warm too. Put me next to a snowbank and it'll start melting.
And when I get sick, I get warmer. So the last thing I want
is to put something warm in you.
Yes.
It's really good for a scratchy throat, though. So if you've got like drainage.
Oh, yes. Hot toddies are wonderful. Hot toddies are also wonderful because like everything in them is like good for you when you are sick. And I know you're talking about medicinal, and this is probably not going to like encourage you to like them more. It makes me like it more. Honey is antiseptic. Citrus is good for colds and stuff too, and your hot water. Oh, bourbon, alcohol, also antiseptic. And then your hot water just opens everything up. So when you combine all those things, it is really, really nice because it is like, yes, let me drain all of the phlegm from my head.
Yes.
Yes. All of the, what is it? The bad humors?
Oh yeah. Yep.
I use Chinese mustard for my bad humors.
Yeah.
Okay, so is there a proper way to pour the chamomile? Anybody have a thought on that?
Do you think he let it steep first? Or
I would say it's got to steep a little bit. Yeah. I just checked. It's still pretty pale inside.
It is. Okay. Chamomile, and it does not turn, like, at all. I could not tell. I let it steep for, like, six or seven minutes and I could not tell
the difference.
But I could taste it, just FYI.
Oh, you couldn't visually tell.
Yes, I could not. Like, I mean...
Yeah, it's a pretty light colored
it's
tea.
It's very light.
And it smells lovely already.
So for a long time I thought a hot toddy had to have tea in it. Mm.
But it could have water?
It can just be hot water as long as there's lemon and bourbon.
Most of the time when I make hot toddies at home, I'll use bourbon, lemon juice, honey, and then I'll put a little bit of allspice dram in it. Instead of taking the time to use the cinnamon stick and the studded orange or lemon.
I do not
stud my orange peel, though. I don't have time for that.
It seems like when you're sick, the last thing you want to do is make something fussy.
Right.
Would you describe a toddy as really fussy, though?
Do you make your own toddy?
Oh, yes.
Seems to me like the perfect drink that someone makes for you.
Yes, but when you don't have a waiter available, it's not hard.
When Anders doesn't make his home visit. Yeah.
I don't think that it should be served by a waiter, either. It's a loved one.
Yes, like
they're the ones who provide the toddy.
Who's making you the chicken noodle soup?
A person you pay.
It smells very nice.
It smells very lemony.
What is the minimum that you need for it to be a toddy? Alcohol and hot water?
The thing is that toddy is a type of drink. But from what we could tell, they didn't even have to be hot. It's almost just like an alcoholic mixed drink. In the first cocktail book, there's references to toddies, and they aren't necessarily hot.
I think you at least need honey.
That wasn't required originally either. I think
now if you're going to present someone with toddies, you've got to add honey, because otherwise it's not going to help with the sore throat from the...
It's like having a margarita without
lime.
Yeah, I was going to say salt, but I was like, well, lots of people prefer margaritas without salt.
These are all 20th century...
They are monsters. We don't associate with them, but they exist. And the law says we can't kill them.
Well, for now, until the purge is instated. Right.
Again, oh, Trump's America.
So I have not had a toddy with chamomile before. I usually have one with like black tea or rooibos. So I'm used to like a darker flavor in a toddy. But this is very nice. It adds like a sort of bright floral to contrast the lemon.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe if it's, because I'm the same way. If I've ever had one, it's usually been with a black tea or something a little bit darker, a little richer. So I don't know if it's that, but it's like, it doesn't feel like it has as much body. For me, it is so much thinner.
And maybe we just added too much tea. It's possible. We filled the glass, you know. It looked like there was the expected amount.
I like this. There's a recipe I have on my list of things to make now that it's colder out that is basically this, but it uses Earl Grey tea, and instead of using bourbon, it uses scotch.
Oh, okay.
It's like smoky, flowery.
It's like a burning prairie.
Yeah, they should call it that.
I don't remember what it's called.
Well, we named it for you.
Okay. I love toddies, though. Oh, nice.
Yeah, and you get to drink it out of like a big mug, you know, and just like hold it in your cold hands, smell it, soothe your throat with that honey.
You know, this is, it's really lemony, like we said, and it's not bothering me.
Oh yeah, you don't really do citrus.
No, yeah. But, you know, I could do this. This isn't.
I like it. I wish it was iced.
Go stand outside without your coat for 10 minutes and then come back.
But you know what, I'm a little bit... I am both with Eric and with Nicole. I would not like this particular drink iced, but I, as a person who is naturally warm, generally prefer iced and cold drinks even in the winter over warm ones. So I see where you're coming from. I respect your position and I honor it.
If I ever go back to that party with your college friends, I will take all the toddies and provide you with something else.
One advantage that this drink does have is it's hard to mix honey into a cocktail. Mm-hmm. So when you're starting with warm ingredients, it's a little easier to incorporate it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of nice.
We just promoed the Bebo, which is one from way back in the day. I don't know if you guys even did it. I think it was just me and Jay sat at the bar at the Brixton. And it's a honey drink. And so I did it with Anders, and he said, you know, he makes a simple syrup with honey. So it doesn't have that stickiness, and yeah.
Maybe it's just the quality of the ingredients they use. The thing that I like about this is that stickiness that you just described, like with the way they've made it here, it doesn't go overboard on that.
Yeah.
I don't have that cough medicine-y coating necessarily on my lips when you're done drinking this. But you can, I think, go very easily overboard in a hot toddy.
Into coating your lips?
We can stop by and pick you some Robidussin up.
No, because that just tastes like alcohol. But, like, the viscosity is okay. The flavor's what's bad. Ooh, more lemon is better?
I just added the lemon, and I actually believe that it proves it.
Oh, it does. I was afraid it would be, like, compete even more with the honey and bourbon, but it brings it out.
It works really, really well.
Yeah, that's nice.
I mean, lemon does that. Like, lemon, when you're cooking with lemon, one of the reasons for using it is it's an enhancer, and it will bring out natural flavors, and I think it does that.
Yep. Agreed.
So, is this punchable?
Yes.
Yes, but in a bowl, not a in a thermos, not a bowl.
I would do this with a carafe, like an insulated carafe with your hot stuff, and then another with the rest of your ingredients. Take
a
pour a little and top it off.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
I thought about this. I think I've done this. I think I've brought that to your house.
You couldn't have a big steaming bowl?
No, because then it's just wasa.
You could have you could put it on your stove.
Yeah, you could
have like a pot of it.
You could put it in, I feel like if you put it in a crock pot, like the flavors are not going to age well together.
Yeah.
Like, mulled wine is one of those things, like, the wine is so heavy that it can take sitting there for a long time on heat. This, I don't think, would do well.
Crock pots are wonderful inventions for getting a bunch of things warm and generally brought together. They're not really good at balancing flavors. And so if you've got something like this where you really want to have some flavors to it that kind of work together, you wouldn't make a hot toddy in a crock pot. Maybe a stove. Because you can control the heat a little better. But do not crock pot your hot toddy.
No, I still
do not crock the toddy.
Crock toddy.
The crock toddy.
Yeah, you got your carafe of your hot tea or hot water, and then you have the rest of your ingredients in another carafe.
Yeah.
And then you pour a little and top it off with your hot stuff.
Yeah. You prep each glass and then you make tea.
And you get a little bit of a show for the people who are showing up.
Okay.
Was it Joan Crawford? One of those. I think it was Joan Crawford always talked about that was her secret to like entertaining. Was she just put on a little? She made sure that there was something she was doing, and the food all had vodka in it. Because she said it made the conversation more interesting, and nobody would ever know the difference.
Yeah.
She also possibly beat her children. So.
There's that. Nicole, I think we should do a show for the two of us where we just drink hot beverages.
Yes. Yes. We've got Glug, we've got Hot Toddies, we've got
Tom and Jerry's.
Tom and Jerry's.
Oh, just heat up any of the cocktails.
We have
a nice hot Manhattan.
A hot Manhattan.
Hot, hot martini.
Coffee. Oh my god, a hot martini.
And then variations on each one.
Hot Punch. They've got a Hot Punch here that's really good. That 48 that I had.
Yeah, that's the
Charles Dickens Punch.
Dickens Punch, yeah.
So, for my birthday this year, my friends gave me a honey-flavored schnapps. So for that, you can just, you don't do bourbon and honey. You can just pour that into some tea and you've got a toddy.
Was it actually honey-flavored? Or was it made of honey?
It was not mead.
Well, there's another kind of alcohol called Baron Jaeger.
It was Baron Jaeger.
Have you tried it yet?
It's amazing. I'm almost finished with it.
What I remember from trying that, I had some in college. A friend came back from Latvia with a bottle. It was just like fire. It was like, I don't recall much honey flavor.
Are you drinking it straight?
Have you had a lot of liquor experience when you tried it?
Not as much as I do now.
Because on a scale of let's say amaretto's on one side, mm-hmm. and just moon shines on the other side. I'd put it definitely more toward the amaretto than the moonshine.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. What was your scale there, like structure or taste or
fire?
Fire. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Say no more. I know what you mean.
It sounds like a good party idea.
Yes.
Get a bottle of that.
A bunch of them lined up, and the guests don't know which one they're taking. I bet you're all going to come to my next party.
I'd rather go to Rachel's.
You should have a hot...
What if I told you they would be hot?
Except one of them's varnish.
Oh, no. It's literally acetone.
One of them's been lit on fire.
So, does this pair with chicken soup?
No.
No.
No. One hot thing at a time. Come on.
No. Yeah. This is not a pair.
This is not a Kleenex. It pairs with Kleenex.
And it pairs with a nice Vicks Vapo rub.
Cookies.
Definitely cookies.
Shortbread cookies with this would be good.
Yes.
They would be called biscuits, though.
Yes, sure. Okay. Fine.
So Ritz crackers.
I would.
Hot toddy.
I love Ritz crackers. I told you, I'm like an old man. I love my high-waisted pants.
Oh, some slices of apple would be good with this.
Yeah.
Okay, I can see that.
And Ritz crackers and cheese.
Maybe a sausage platter.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, no, I disagree completely. But again, I think because of my connotation with this as a medicinal approach, like I'm unlikely to make something like this for myself at home unless I'm sick. And if I'm sick, I'm not going to be like, oh, cookie or crackers. I'm just going to be like, I'm miserable and just be drinking it.
Right. So that's when you just start grabbing like cold cuts from the fridge.
Right. So yeah, the appropriate thing you paired it with is like peanut butter and cold cut and whatever it is that you've had around. It's not like very gourmet.
You don't want to cook anything.
No. Yeah, no, there's no
sophistication. No, you're not cooking something to eat with this.
No. A hot toddy?
Uh-uh.
Hot toddy is not cooking.
You've boiled water. That was
good. You could. It's true.
Yeah. You cooked those tea leaves real good.
You cooked them the way God intended. But no, I don't think it pairs. The only thing I think you pair with a hot toddy is maybe like a shot of brandy or something. Like,
you can make a hot toddy with brandy.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be so good.
You pair it with another alcohol that is also ostensibly medicinal.
More hot toddies.
And a Netflix marathon.
You pair it with a hot toddy.
And
a Netflix marathon. Yes, you pair it with a Netflix marathon that because you're so sick and just want to go to bed, you're going to start and fall asleep within 15 minutes of the first episode.
A Netflix marathon that you watch sideways.
Right.
I think you could poach pears in this.
Oh, for sure.
And it would taste great. With a scoop of ice cream.
Ooh, ice cream and hot toddy.
Ooh, that would be good.
I hear you.
I did make an Earl Grey ice cream last summer.
Would try.
That actually would probably work. Like, if you were making it with a tea. I mean, we've moved again beyond medicinal at this point. But
that's fine.
If you were to make if you were so inclined, an Earl Grey ice cream poached pear hot toddy concoction would probably taste pretty good.
Yeah. I'm telling you, the most common ailment I make this to solve is just being cold.
Is sobriety?
Ha!
Yeah,
also
that's what I make them.
Cold and sober, this will solve it.
And the cold is even sort of subjective to me. It's like, I don't necessarily have to be cold. It's cold outside. That qualifies.
Oh yeah, you pair it with like a fireside?
Yeah. See, I really want to make that one with scotch and do a fireside.
Oh yeah. I have a fire, so come on by.
I have an outdoor fire pit, but I think we might have missed the window. I think we all got busy like during the window.
Chicago has a window of like 2 days to enjoy fall. And then it just smacks you. For 6 months.
I've been enjoying it.
I disagree, but I understand that my cold tolerance is different than yours.
I feel like we've gone from four seasons to two. Has that always been true? I feel like it's changed, but I don't know.
Being in Chicago and having a spring.
Same.
Yeah,
the Midwest doesn't have spring.
No.
St. Louis does.
Yeah, but St. Louis is further south. Like,
it's still the Midwest.
Well, okay, I'll check this. Below a certain, like latitude line, I basically grew up in the Midwest, and then I moved to the East Coast, and when I was living in the Mid-Atlantic, like, that was the first place I'd ever lived where spring was actually a thing.
Yeah.
Where you had it for more than 3 days, and it went longer than just cold, mud, gross,
uh-huh.
3 days of blooms and blossom, and then 90 degrees in humidity.
Yeah.
Like, you actually had, like, a good long 3-4 weeks of, like, kind of nice, beautiful weather. But that doesn't happen in this part of the world.
We have, like, 2.5 seasons.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say two,
three.
But...
yeah. There is fall. Fall is a season.
Yes.
Spring is just very, very short.
Spring does not even exist.
No.
You measure spring in hours.
Three days does not a season make.
Yeah. Or we're just so excited for summer that we call spring here summer.
Well, that's true, too.
Like, well, the calendar says June, so it must be summer.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's the opposite. I see. We all have seen people in Chicago in March. The first day it hits, like, 60 degrees. And people start walking outside in shorts and t-shirts, and you are like, it is not that warm.
I think, like, you mean May.
I remember a few years ago.
No, you always get, like, the one in March. You always get that one teaser day.
And a few years ago, it hit, like, high 70s, maybe even, like, 80 in March. It was a total fluke, and it was like that for a day and a half. And I remember we went to Moody's, and the beer garden was, like, insane.
Everyone just gets naked. We're all so excited.
Also, global warming is a thing, and we have 70 degree days in January, so...
Prove it.
It happened, like, last year. What are you talking about?
That's a discussion. What are you going to do when global warming takes away your hot toddy weather?
The moon.
With current predictions, we will still have hot toddy weather. We have a giant heat sink right next to us that will temper the effects.
And our summer evenings can still get chilly.
Have you ever examined or gone to a doctor about circulation problems?
My vitals are good.
Okay. I'm worried for you.
I need more vitamin D.
Okay.
Yeah, you do.
I
do.
Doesn't everybody.
Vitamin D is one of my favorite euphemisms. But actual vitamin D in this case. The doctor doesn't measure for the other one.
Maybe your doctor.
If we're going to relate weather to things, I mean, there are a lot of babies born in October.
That's true.
So many October babies from that polar vortex from a few years ago. I knew, like, five.
Did the power also go out?
Like, what? Everyone was stuck inside boning for, like, 4 days.
No, it's true.
I was in Mexico.
There's a reason why.
Yeah. Like, I'm not kidding. And, like, I remember one of the people who was pregnant was like, I'm so upset when people are like, you have a polar vortex, baby. And I was just like, well, you do.
Well, you do. Uh-huh. Well, you do, Blanche. You do.
Yeah, well, you do. Maybe you should have thought about that because she has control of that.
Humble brag here. During the polar vortex, no, this is just a straight up brag. I was in Mexico this year during the polar vortex, but I had the flu. And so I made, like, some Theraflu. I was drinking, like, hot beverages in Mexico because I was ill as hell.
Tequila? Some tequila in there?
There was no tequila, but whatever was in there fucked me up.
I think that's just karma being like, well, here you go.
Yep.
You thought you were going to escape.
You thought you could escape.
Oh no.
I can just make you just as sick as you would be at home. Yep. But, I'm telling you, hot beverage and I was feeling sick. Even when the weather was nice. Worked like a charm.
So when you go to Mexico on vacation, are you still cold?
Mexico City is different from Cancun. So Mexico City actually does hit like 40 in the evening.
It's got elevation though, right?
Yeah. It's higher than Boulder.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's a mile and a half high. Well,
it's built on a lake.
Yeah, it's like it's a plateau that used to be a lake. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's a cool spot, but I recommend not getting the flu there, especially with the altitude. It does not help.
I think all the vitamins are euphemisms. Vitamin A, vitamin B, vitamin C.
I don't know about E. E is harder.
Vitamin Eric.
There you go.
Eric can tell you about vitamin E.
I hear it's great for your skin.
So, what do we think of the Ward 8 hot toddy?
Love it.
But please don't come get it when you're sick. They deserve better than that.
Make your own toddy at home. There are many recipes online if you are sick.
And it's all stuff you already have. You're already going to have bourbon because you're a smart person. You're already going to have honey. And hot water is easy to make.
And you probably have tea or something.
Tea, lemon, both good but optional.
Yeah, true.
I discovered...
Although, need something.
Yeah.
If you have, like, Amazon Now or whatever
Amazon
it is...
Amazon Now.
You can have them bring you, like, lemons or lemon juice to your house.
While you're cooking. And when you're like, nope, I need that flour right now.
Yeah. Or like when you're like, oh,
I will break the back of some marginally paid worker for my convenience.
Mine was,
thank you,
oh,
Jeff Bezos.
I don't want to go. Look, I have free credit.
Oh, here's a question. What's the threshold under which you will no longer get delivery because it's too terrible out?
Oh, when you're going to go, like you're going to have mercy on
yeah.
the person who has to bring it.
Because like you're like, nope, I would just be a complete asshole if I got something delivered now, so I'm not going to order delivery.
Polar Vortex deliveries?
Yeah, Polar yeah. Vortex. I was like, no, I'm not ordering something.
Or like heavy snow, heavy rain.
Yep. Is there reasonable risk to life and limb? For somebody, like, am I doing it, if I'm not, if the reason why I'm asking for delivery is because I fear for my life or my limb, then it's not right for me to have somebody else.
Yeah.
But if it's like, it's 65 degrees out, I'm just lazy, sure.
Yeah. Or like, it's drizzling and I don't really want to get wet, someone else can get wet.
Sure. I'm tipping them. I mean,
yeah.
I'm remunerating them for their service.
We were debating whether we can order Indian food on Diwali. It's just like, it seems right to celebrate with Indian food, but also now it's Diwali, so
I don't go to stores on Thanksgiving.
I have a long-standing tradition of going to Mexican bars on St. Patrick's Day and going to Irish bars on Cinco de Mayo.
I like that. That's good.
So what do you think of the toddy? You're not a hot drink person, so...
I liked it, but I am sweating.
Yeah, so you're
Anders good. Always makes me sweat, though.
But you said it was good.
Good
it would be good if it was cold, right?
Yes. Yeah. So don't come when you're sick. Definitely come when you're cold and you don't want to make it yourself, because it does taste really good.
True.
We're going to wrap this up. Everyone, keep listening to the show, because it's really good. And like I said at the beginning, this is... second to the last episode that is being redone and posted, almost done, with the first 100 cocktails. First 100 monsters. The zoo is getting bigger. The Monster Zoo. Come check us out at blackliverproject.com. Of course, you can see us on Facebook. You can join in the shenanigans on Twitter. We have a store up. You can get a shirt. You can get a phone case. You can get a booze bag, Black Liver Project booze bag. You can tell everybody that you enjoy the Black Liver Project and the Monster in the Glass podcast. So, everyone, keep on thinking and drinking. Until next time, we're out of here.
Whiskey when I'm sick and whiskey when I'm sick of it. Getting through the day and making the most of it. Look like Cowboy Jane.
Thank you for listening to the Monster in a Glass podcast. I would like to thank Jason Cruz and Nick Lehman for unraveling the history in the front part of the show. The regular tasting team, Kevin Ortajczyk, Rachel Rubin, Nicole Pizzini, and Eric Martin for joining me in the grueling task of sampling each cocktail we discuss. And a special thanks to the skilled bartenders at Ward 8 in Evanston, Illinois, for taming the cocktail monsters we enjoy. I would also like to thank Mark Piani for the music at the head of the show. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook, subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podomatic, and give us an awesome rating and tell us what you think while you're at it. And as always, if you're into thinking and drinking, come blacken your liver with us.